and the stakeholder group they represent. So, as we go on here, board and RAC members should not be a party line advocates for regional or local or special interest groups that they select to represent. So we've got to represent public, like myself, public at large, and try to be non-biased. And that leads us on into biases. Be objective and fair in all policy considerations. Treat all people addressing the RAC and board with courtesy and respect, regardless of their viewpoint or their sharpness. And three, I kind of made some notes in the margins there too. You know, do not create appearance of your biases. Appearing disinterested during presentation or comments, partially those that express opposing points of view, rolling your eyes, using facial expressions to convey dissatisfaction with opposing points of view. Avoid those kind of things. Anyway, there's more there. And then kind of the bottom of the page, kind of in summary, I've inked in there, you know, we all do have biases because we each were raised in different ways in life, and yeah, we have biases. We recognize you have a bias, and it's best not to show them. Spin on down to L, parliamentary procedure. There's kind of a page there. You know, there was some questions in our last board meeting as John amended our motion. And that is proper parliamentary procedure is adding on to a motion. That way we better understand what we want to do. Amending a motion. And that's something we can do to maybe make a motion stronger, better understood, or whatever. So take the time to kind of review some of these things. The last page R is kind of what got me on this roll of, okay, I need to present something just for myself, if nothing else. Parliamentary procedure. At the heart of this rule, the majority, with respect for the minority, its objective is to allow deliberation upon the questions of interest to the organization and to arrive at a sense or the will of the assembly upon these questions. So we're self-governing, we're assisting Wildlife Board. We're trying to represent our corner of the world here in the corner of Utah with the best decisions and the best things that we can to make recommendations. So, anyway, read up. And then understand things and better yourselves, which you can. Okay? Thank you. So let's move on to the second item on our agenda. We need to entertain a motion of approving the agenda is one. So everybody kind of look through the agenda. We have five items on it. Entertain a motion.
To accept the agenda as written.
I'll second it.
Okay, Carrie's made the motion and Beth has seconded it. Go with the agenda as written. Okay, and we need a vote. Everybody approving the agenda? Those in favor? Thanks, Carrie. Gotta train me.
There,
we're good. Okay. Minutes. Did everybody get a chance to read through the minutes and do a motion on the minutes?
How motion do we accept the minutes?
I second the motion.
Beth made the motion.
I second it.
Yeah. Okay. Now I draw blanks every once in a while, but it'll be okay. And Mitch seconded it. We need to vote on that? All those in favor of the minutes? Unanimous? Okay, we'll turn the time over to Boyd for wildlife meeting update.
Oh, no, that's yours.
Oh, that's mine still. Okay, it is. Let me give you an update on when I went out to the state board meeting. Kurt is doing an excellent job. All those board members have vital interest in wildlife across the state of Utah, and it was good to meet some of them. They, you know, the same thing, go through the, there was a lot of discussion on the goat management plans. They split it into two items and voted on it as separate. The one on Mount Dutton, there was a lot of discussion and stuff, and voting on the one on LaSalle. And then they actually amended the motion on the LaSalle, and the final motion was they were going to maybe even reduce the numbers or watch the numbers. I've got a draft here of the minutes summary, and it didn't quite summarize what was done there. But so there was a lot of interest, just like when they did the UNAs, they put goats in the UNAs. There was a lot of interested parties that came and gave presentations. And the different boards around the state had comments and things as that was going to happen. There was some plant concerns. There was five endangered species in the LaSalle's, and there was a lot of discussion in that manner. That took the first 3 hours of the meeting. And then it took another 2.5 hours on the second item, which was the cougar recommendation. So the first 5.5 hours of the meeting, were, we got through two agenda items, so it, it was a long day. Everybody was pretty strained. But there was a lot of good discussion and a lot of sharing. And on the cougar recommendations, they ended up going with the requirements the divisions had presented. And at the end, they wanted to reopen the management plan and provide a simplified proposal that would incorporate unit by unit in next year's recommendations, so that it wouldn't go into a 3 to 5 year plan, but they'd reopen it next year and look at the cougar and the cougar aspects again. Anyway, there was the rest of the motions, the fur bearer and all those were recommended in the pass as presented. The waterfowl guidebook, they changed the date. This year's would start on September 1st, 2013 for the Youth Day. And then they went on down and in the military, on down, all the other things passed as presented. The proposed fee schedule was discussed and accepted as presented. And the comment was made that it would go to the legislature on July of 2014 as far as the 2015 fee schedule changes. And everything else was passed as presented, so that's all I have on kind of an update on what went on in the state wildlife. So now we're ready for the regional update.
All right, thanks, Wayne. Mr. Chairman, I'll start off here with habitat, with the habitat section. So far this year, we've treated roughly 6,000 new acres with a mix of brush hog and lop and scatter projects throughout the region. They've completed 4 new guzzlers in the Book Cliffs, wildlife and livestock guzzlers, and then 3 Eagle Scout projects. On three other guzzlers where they ripped out and replaced the old guzzlers, put in new tanks and aprons up on Bear Top. They've rebuilt an apron and a new guzzler on the Aviniquin unit, and also, and that's it in the way of the guzzlers. And funding for those came from various sportsmen's organizations throughout the state. Our aquatic section, they're pretty much finishing up their summer work on their T&E species and gearing up for treatment on the middle fork of the Sheep Creek. Now, we do two treatments on that. The first one was last year. This will be a finish-up treatment. We'll go back in and redo it again to make sure we remove the unwanted fish in those drainages. Our next, the dates that we'll be treating on that is the 17th. We're meeting up on the 17th up there for preparation, and the actual treatment will be on the 18th. Now, if any of you would like a tour of the project while that's going, contact Ron Stewart over here, and he'll hook you up on just going up there and seeing what they're doing and how they're doing it. It's really cool. There's lots of really neat things. A lot of people really don't understand what goes into one of these treatments. We'll have a crew of approximately 50 people up there. And it's almost, the manager does a really good job, and the assistant manager, they do a really good job. It's almost like herding cats with an air horn. Everybody's going around doing their various things, and there's just people all over the mountain, and they really do a really good job at keeping people organized. If you want to be a volunteer and help out on anything, I'll need you to contact Trina or Garn Birchall, and they'll put you to work doing something. They even have me up there carrying a backpack, electroshock backpack, down the river. So I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it sure beats driving a desk for the day. We just finished up our electrofishing up on the Green River for this go-around. And I just wanted to share with you some of the information that we got from that. And if you ever want to do that, let us know. We do it in the spring and early fall. But from the spillway, or in the spillway area on the first night, they collected a total of 396 fish. And then around the little hole area on the last night, they collected 438 fish. So that's a lot of fish in those areas. That Green River is very productive and doing very well. The largest brown trout that they collected information from was 19.3 inches, 2.3 pounds, was in the spillway area. The brown trout was 21.8 inches and 3.9 pounds, and that was down in the little hole area. They also collected a whitefish, and I haven't seen a whitefish that was this big before. So it was 20.5 inches and 3.7 pounds, and it was down in the little hole area. So that's a big fish. And so they finished up with that, and that's all done, and our aquatics folks will take that information and continue to do good things with it on the Green River. Our law enforcement folks, they've participated in some roadblocks for AIS compliance, and they're doing those down in the southern portion of the state. And even shorthanded, we send folks down there to help out and to do what they can working on our AIS projects. We've also been training a new recruit, and one day he'll be here and we can actually point him out to you. But in fact, Randy here is his sergeant and his trainer. We're doing it just a little bit different than most because we are kind of shorthanded. But Jake Greenwood, and some of you may remember Charlie, this is Charlie's son, and we're looking forward to get him going. This will bring us up where we'll only be short we're hoping by this time next year we'll be full steam ahead. So our game management section, we've finished up the preseason counts. We're low in numbers. on our pronghorn, which is kind of to be expected due to the drought that we've had the last couple of years. But the good news part of that is with these rains, some vegetation will be coming out. It'll be greening up a little bit here and there, which will be good, hopefully, for next year. And we completed our black-footed ferret surveys. Our outreach, in case you're interested, we have Kokanee Day here, if you want to go see the redfish. We're going to be up there at Sheep Creek on September the 14th from 9 to 3. Out there and take a look at them. Ron's been spending a lot of time at the fair, helping out at the fair. I wanted to touch on just a couple more things. The goat transplant was basically successful. The management plan was passed by the Wildlife Board, or the movement plan was passed by, relocation plan was passed by the Wildlife Board. They captured 53 mountain goats on the Tushers above Beaver last week. 10 went to Nebo to supplement that population. 20 went to the LaSalles, and 20 went to the Black Hills of South Dakota to supplement a herd there. And in exchange, they're giving us turkeys. And I don't know how you figure out how many turkeys you get for one goat, but I guess it's kind of a deal that they work out through negotiations, and hopefully he's a better negotiator now. Okay, second, they've got a new capture plan which will be carried out in October to move goats over to Mount Dutton. Many of you might have seen in the newspaper this last week about the sheep herder that was rescued out on the LaSalle's. Apparently he was resting next to a tree and got and kind of startled a bull elk that was coming down the trail and ended up having himself gored. And then he had to walk several miles to reach another sheep herder that was out there. And the second herder came down to our folks that were on the release site. And I don't know if you guys remember Ben Wolford, but fortunately for the sheep herder, Ben was there. He's an EMT, and they treated him and stabilized him, and they got him off the mountain, and he's doing well in Grand Junction right now. So basically, that's mostly a regional update with a few outside the region tidbits of stuff thrown in. So that's all I have for you, Mr. Chairman.
That's good. Let's move on into...
Mr. Chairman, can we fire any questions today?
Sure.
I do this every year when you talk about fishing on the river. Have you got otters?
Yeah.
That up in the river.
Yeah.
How are they treating you? Are they getting more of them, or are they...
You know, we had BYU up, and they trapped and moved quite a few of them, so the population is down a little bit. But they've done really well, and I haven't received any complaints from the fishermen about them being in there. They take mostly the rough fish, which, you know, the carp and things like that, a little bigger, slower moving fish that they can trap on the bottom, easier to catch. But certainly they will
trap down for a little while when the otters come through.
They certainly will, and you know, if you got an otter in a pool, trout aren't going to stay. You know, they're going to move out of there, or they may slow down and they're biting, or, you know, things like that. But for the most part, they've been something good in that ecosystem and haven't been too much of a problem.
I don't have to come face to face with the brush creek. They're quite the critter there.
Yeah.
They're not little.
Yeah, they can be fun to watch. They're not totally afraid of you, and they go down their slides and they go about their business whether you're there or not a lot of times. So.
You didn't find any with John Mathis's ear tag still on?
No. No, but I know I brought them in and moved them around quite a bit when the program first started going. And I did get a letter one time from a guy from Japan who expressed how that made his whole trip was seeing the river otter down on the green when he was floating on the green, and it came up to his boat and looked in the boat, you know, kind of thing as they were floating along, and it made his day. So.
I'm curious every year, you know, how the otters are doing, but sounds like they're doing all right.
Yeah.
Any other questions about that? Okay. Welcome, Paul.
I'm Drew.
You're Drew. Okay, I have Drew written down here, and I got Paul on the screen. I don't know which way to go. So welcome, both of you.
Well, thank you. And it's always a pleasure to, you know, present our recommendations to you guys and the public. And I will recognize Paul and chastise our regional folks who would rather be on leave than here. I don't know what the hell they're thinking, but we'll pick up the slack for them. Just to let you guys know before I get started, the aquatic section takes great pride in its public process and understanding as a unit that, you know, we have several responsibilities. The one is to manage both native and sport fish, and all of these decisions concern both. In the end, to maximize the opportunities for all of our user groups, whoever they may be, our spear fishermen, our regular fishermen, bass fishermen, trout fishermen, they all pay our bills in the end. And then third, we also manage conflicts between those user groups and try and manage those to the best of our ability, you know, while providing opportunities for everyone. Over the past several years, we've kind of changed our public process a little bit. We used to do a spring informational, as you may or may not be aware, and we brought concepts at that time. And then we synthesized those and kind of solidified them through the summer and then brought them back as real firm recommendations in the fall. A couple years ago, we went away from that and went to these open houses. And every region, I believe, had several open houses this spring. And that was an opportunity in an informal setting for the general public to just come in, talk to the division as, you know, just on a friendly basis, and bring ideas forward. And those have worked. And then the other thing we've done is we've implemented an online survey that goes out to all of the licensed anglers in Utah that we have emails for. And so we've done that the last couple years. And so this year we had our online survey, and I'll get right into it. We conducted our statewide survey. This was after or during our open house time, and we left it open for a month and just collected input through that whole time. We asked 8 questions regarding possible regulation changes, and then 1 question regarding a management change, or at least a potential management change at Schofield Reservoir. And then lastly, there's just a blank space where we wanted the anglers to just tell us what they were thinking, whether we were on the right track, whether there was some management direction that they would like to see, management changes for specific waters, whatever those ideas and concepts may be. All told, we had 1,158 people that completed the survey. So last year at the Wildlife Board, there was I think it was this rack, and then the Wildlife Board, there was an action item that we undertook that we were directed by the Wildlife Board to look at, a multiple day possession limit. So what we did is we developed a special survey just specific to this topic to ask people 3 concepts. One would be a 2-day possession limit for all species of fish. The second being a 2-day possession limit for just warm and cool water fish, so anything that's not a trout or salmon. And then the last possibility would be to do nothing. And the reason that we use 2-day instead of, you know, 3-day or 4-day or 5-day is if you look across all of the different states in the United States that have multiple day limits, it's either a 2-day or a 1-day. And so in order to be consistent with our partners around us, you know, such as Wyoming and Idaho and the other surrounding states, we thought 2-day would be enough. And then the alternatives we included in that statewide survey. So what we discovered was just over 50% of the people were supportive of a two-day possession limit for all species. There was just over 10 to 12% of the people were supportive of a two-day possession limit for warm or cool water species. So those are the non-trout species. And then there was a minority that said that they wanted no change. And so this told us that our public would support a two-day possession limit in some fashion, but we really needed to kind of iron out, what that might be. And so we worked with our regional managers, and we looked at some other states, and what we came up with was this concept, that what we're recommending is this, and this was our regional managers, angler groups, and others. You can, in addition to one daily limit of unprocessed fish, so those would be the fish that you caught that day, you could possess an additional limit of fish that are processed as long as they were caught in a previous day. The thought behind this concept that's we thought would be, furthermore, there are two exceptions, Strawberry Reservoir and Flaming Gorge. Strawberry, because of the immense amount of pressure it gets, and we felt it would be better to approach this cautiously and see how this affected other waters before we implemented it on what is our most popular water. And then Flaming Gorge is an interstate water. And Wyoming, we've been working with them, and what they would like to do is they would like to take this two-day possession limit up at their next proclamation rotation, which is not this year, or not next year, but the following year. And so what we would do is at that time, if that passed in Wyoming, then move forward with the Flaming Gorge with this concept. Moving on, underwater spearfishing. This is a contentious issue, I'll tell you that. This has been, we've been working with both groups, and this is that managing conflicts while maximizing opportunities for everyone. We have a very vocal group of spear fishermen, and we've been working with them to provide opportunities for them to do what they love to do, which is spearfish. At the same time, we have a very vocal, organized angler groups who are very opposed to spearfishing in any regard. And although both deserve, some opportunities, we need to make sure that we're doing the best by both groups. And so we work with these groups, Paul and I, through the winter, this last winter, monthly, and to review the rule and see what opportunities we could provide while minimizing that conflict that I discussed earlier. What you'll see is next is the recommendation that came out of that. I'll tell you that it was difficult. I think that because of the polar opposite interests, that no one felt they really won the whole victory, which is probably a good thing in a group like that with such differing opinions. And I would like to thank the group members that took part in that. It was very worthwhile for everybody, I believe, to understand what that other group is, what they do, and what their desires are. So we asked this question, and I'll show you the recommendation in a second, but we asked this question on that online survey, and just over 70% of the people surveyed supported this recommendation, which is very promising. So what I have here is the actual recommendation. As you'll see, there are two columns. The first column are a group of waters that we all agreed in that group that could be used as spearfishing waters year-round. So the season would be extended from what it is now, so January 1st through December 31st. And the yellow waters in there would be additional waters for additional opportunities for spear fishermen. Many of those are unique opportunities. Recapture Reservoir is a water that has a northern pike in it. Sand Lake has grayling. Smith-Morehouse, I believe that's kokanee. And Porcupine Reservoir has kokanee. Newcastle has wipers and rainbows. So these are just unique opportunities to give these guys some additional fish to pursue. The group of waters on the right are waters which we all agreed should be closed, at least to the protection of spawning bass. And this was the primary concern for our regular anglers. Spear fishermen it was feared that they could unethically go and pursue fish while black bass while they're on the nest, and so we would recommend a closure from the take of black bass from April 1st through the 4th Saturday in June. Once again, the yellow waters would be new, and the waters in white are existing. And lastly, as a group, we agreed to recommend closure of Jordanelle Reservoir and Lost Creek Reservoirs to underwater spearfishing. Those were two waters of primary concern because of some limits and some trophy opportunities that regular anglers really had issue with spearfishermen going there and taking those fish. And the last little sentence there is just a reminder to everybody. Carp can be taken statewide. As long as there's an open fishing season, spear fishermen can feel free to go take carp at their will. Another thing that happened over the past couple of years is when we have seen an illegal introduction of fish in a water throughout Utah, we have implemented what we call a catch and kill regulation, which means that there's no limit, and if you do catch one, we'd like you to, you know, kill the fish and take it home with you, or, you know, dispose of it in the water. The problem is that there is some legislature in place at that time that prohibited fish that are protected from being wasted. And so what we did is we worked with the legislature to allow the wildlife board to designate which fish could be disposed of in this fashion and where that could take place, which passed, which brings us to this slide. The first two lines are what happened at the legislature. The second is what we agreed to do is provide recommendations for how anglers would dispose of those fish. And so this would be in the guidebook, is just some information for the general angler. And as you can see, it's pretty general, but you can dispose of them, or we would like you to dispose of them in the water where they're caught. So you could do the lake pout method, which is puncture the air bladder and return them to the water. Two would be to bring a shovel, bury them on the shoreline, and get them out of sight and out of mind so the regular anglers don't have to see them or smell them. Third would be a fish cleaning station where other anglers dispose of their fish, and then, or, you know, your residents. And then lastly, a place where disposal is authorized by law, so that would be a landfill or other place. Now, what we had to do was recommend waters to you guys and the Wildlife Board, so waters and species that could be allowed for waste. The first would be common carp in all waters statewide. That would be our recommendation. The rest of those, except for Lake Powell, are places where we've had illegal introductions, and the fish species on the right are those fish species that were illegally introduced. The only outlier there is Lake Powell and striped bass. Lake Powell and striped bass get healthy, get big, run out of food, get skinny and die. The management concept in the past, and we continue this, is if you catch one that's skinny and it doesn't look edible, dispose of it in those methods that we identified in that last slide. Now, this is specific to your region in the southeast region. We have a catch and kill and a no limit on fish in the Green and Colorado main stem. What we would like to do is expand that to the Green River and its tributaries, the Colorado River and its tributaries, and the San Juan and its tributaries. This would be an allowance for those fish species down below that have a catch and kill in the main stem to have the same limits, which would be consistent with what we would like to do, up to the first water that we manage. And this would just be allowance for those fish to be wasted in those waters. This is the fish. We have a no limit, and this is what we're recommending for those same Green, Colorado, and San Juan rivers and their tribs. We would like to recommend a catch and kill for those waters. So this would just be an expansion of what's already in place. We asked this question in that survey, and it was overwhelmingly supported. Over 80% supported that regulation change. And this is just a list of those waters that I mentioned. So this is just a continuation for your guys' information as to which waters we're talking about. So we have the Green River, we have those tribs of the Green, and I won't read them. Okay. The Colorado River and those tribs listed down below, and then the San Juan River and those tribs. And I remind you that this limit would only be in effect up to the first water that we manage for these species. All right, now moving on to the last section,
These are region-specific limits and recommendations. The first is in the southern region, and I found out for the first time recently that there's actually a town named Bryanhead. And Bryanhead has a pond in the middle of it, and they would like to include that pond as a community fishery. And that every community fishery has this two-fish limit on it, and so they would like to include the same limit in their pond. Furthermore, in the southern region, this is more bookkeeping than anything. Historically, we've included boat prohibitions in our proclamation. About 4 or 5 years ago, we took them out and tried to have state parks do that, since that is their, you know, their job to manage boat traffic and boats and licensing and so forth and so on. The problem is they didn't upkeep the list of waters and what's legal as far as boats and motors. There were seven waters, I believe, that we strictly manage and issue these prohibitions. So we wanted those back in our proclamation so our officers could enforce that, and it would be easier for anglers to see. So the first is a prohibition of boats and float tubes totally. That's Aspenmere Lake, Duck Creek Springs Lake, and Pine Valley Reservoir in the southern region. The second list are waters where where motorboats are prohibited, and it's Anderson Meadow Reservoir, Barney Lake, Boulder Mountain Lakes, except for those couple, which are near roads, and then Little Reservoir in Beaver County. In the southern region also, historically and now and in the future, you can chum with anchovies. What's strange is that you can use this list of bait fish that we have that's legal to use in Utah at Lake Powell, but you can't chum with them presently. We felt like if you can use them as bait and chumming is allowed at Lake Powell, that you should be able to chum with the bait fish that are legal to use, you know, at Lake Powell. Northeast region, Current Creek Reservoir, this is a water that is minimally used. The Northeast region felt it was underutilized. They felt it might be due to a restrictive regulation. As such, they're trying to have a more general regulation to hopefully increase angler use in Current Creek. Red Fleet Reservoir, as you all know, walleye were illegally introduced there. And we also have a mercury advisory on Red Fleet Reservoir, which is the reason we didn't put a catch and kill on that reservoir. It felt probably not in our best interest to force people to take those fish home and potentially eat them. Now that we have this wasting statute, there's other means to dispose of those when they do kill them. So we would like to implement a catch and kill regulation on Red Fleet Reservoir. Wasatch Mountain State Park, another community fishery, new one, and as such, it would have that community fishery limit on it. Central Region Yuba Reservoir, Paul and I have been involved in a work group with anglers, store owners, state parks, water users, and on and on and on for the last year. We met monthly to discuss and come up with a management plan that was palatable by our biologists and the anglers and the store owners, water users. And this regulation, we came up with a management plan, but this pipe limit is part of that management plan. The management plan was specific to thinning out Northern Pike and allowing more trophy opportunities at Yuba Reservoir. As such, this limit would double the limit from the statewide limit, which is 10, and so it would go to 20, and then allow one trophy Northern Pike to be harvested. We asked this question on the online survey as well. It was supported at 80%. Lost Creek Reservoir. We have several reservoirs across the state. Strawberry Reservoir, Panguitch Lake, Schofield, and Lost Creek have the same limit. It's a really restrictive limit that is specific to managing for predator control of Utah chub. Those other waters have this no fillet rule, and we'd like to add Lost Creek Reservoir to that no fillet rule, which includes those other few reservoirs. State Line Reservoir, this is a water in the northern region that had a kokanee fishery in it historically. The kokanee disappeared for a number of years, and we felt like they were gone forever. In recent years, they've come back, and the run is actually really strong right now over the past couple years. And as such, we'd like to renew this protection of spawning kokanee trout or kokanee salmon, and this had a 90% support. Withers Bay, this is just another really consistency thing. We have an allowance of the use of gizzard shad as long as they are, you know, commercially available, as long as they're chemically preserved and available in a store. On Willard Bay, however, you cannot possess gizzard shad. The reason is gizzard shad are alive in Willard Bay, and it was felt that if you possessed gizzard shad that you could move them to other waters. Now, what we'd like to do is allow the possession of gizzard shad for the use as bait on Willard Bay as long as they're preserved, as you know, we specify in our bait section. These three waters are not really sport fisheries so much, except for the Weaver River, but they do hold some really unique native fish, bluehead sucker being the predominant. And as such, we'd like to protect bluehead sucker and other native fish, and by doing so, we would like to add these waters to the list where only carp can be used, or carp are the only non-game fish that can be taken. And that's merely to protect those native fish from being harvested as bait fish. Electric Lake, this is a lake in the southeast region, and this spring we stocked kokanee salmon in it for the very first time. We look forward to a really good kokanee fishery. It's really productive. This is just provincial. We'd like to get this in place as soon as possible to protect kokanee salmon when they do run up the streams or ripen in the reservoir, and we like to protect them so that they can spawn and return fried fingerlings to the reservoir. And this was overwhelmingly supported as well. And this is the same regulation, just specific to the TRIBs of Electric Lake. We have historically, and this is a problem in the Northeast region, which you may or may not be aware of, the Flaming Gorge, Willard Bay, and Bear Lake are notorious places for snagging to take place, and arguments and perhaps fistfights over snagging, and arguments about what is snagging, what is not snagging. We felt it best to work with the angling groups in other states and try and come up with a clear definition as to what is snagging and then define it. So what we'd recommend is that this be implemented as a rule. It's unlawful to intentionally snag or attempt to snag any fish. And this is new language. Fish hooked anywhere other than the mouth must be immediately released. Snag means to hook a fish anywhere other than the mouth, and if you do, you need to release it immediately, as it says above. And the only exception to this are the Bonneville Cisco, which there's a unique season for and a snagging allowance when they come in to spawn in the late fall and winter. Thank you. I promised you one other slide, just an informational. This is probably, hopefully, of interest to you guys. In 2005. We used tiger trout to control Utah chubs at Schofield Reservoir, which appeared just a couple years before then. And then we also added Bear Lake cutthroat trout to Schofield to further control these chubs. Rainbow trout have been in rapid decline, which happens in these waters where chubs show up. The first thing that happens is your rainbow health and condition go down. And then the survival follows. And we've seen that at Schofield Reservoir. So we worked with Utah State on a research project, which is now complete. We just saw some preliminary data last night, which I wish we had. But, you know, one of the things that we were curious about, because Utah is predominantly a rainbow trout fisherman's haven, the majority of our anglers love and love to pursue rainbow trout. So we had to ask the question, would they support ceasing rainbow trout stocking for a period of time, and then adding additional predators in the reservoir to, you know, more quickly control these chubs and bring the condition in the reservoir back up to a suitable level where rainbow trout may be used. And so we're contemplating this if Utah State study looks like it would work. And I'll finish up. The next one I'm not going to go into, but this one, it was overwhelmingly supported, 90%. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Questions from around? Yeah.
Back to the spearfishing. It's just I don't know the answer. Is the spearfishing equipment a risk for zebra mussel, like boats are? And if it is it does it fall under the same rules as boats?
It does. We've worked with those guys. They're aware of the rules that they need to, you know, they need to take in place. They're no different than any other diver. And, you know, people with waders can transfer AIS and mussels as well. So we Paul and I have worked with those guys, and they're aware of those rules.
Has there been any creel
Excuse me, just questions from the rack for a minute, and then we'll take public questions in just a second. Any other questions from the
rack? Yeah, I've got a question. On the two possession limit proposal, how would something like that be, I guess, monitored or enforced kind of on a random basis? How would officers...
Well, right now, and we worked 6 months or more with our law enforcement, you know, both in Salt Lake and statewide, and asked them that question, asked them if this was possible. And the one thing they said is, you know, we enforce 99.9% of the law that they enforce is at the water while people are fishing or when they immediately leave the water. There's only one or two waters that are enforced otherwise, and it would take a complaint for an officer to go into someone's house or someone's camper, you know, or some probable cause to be able to do that. So it falls in line with what they're already doing.
Question on some of the rules and regulations as you take them over to the guidebook. The discussion on the kill and some of that, it was and waters, and it was talking about Colorado and the green.
Yes.
I guess in our informational packets, it was a little confusing that we went from the Coconine salmon to talking about the kill, and there was no heading. Anyway, I'm just wondering what's being proposed to take it to the guidebook.
Okay. What's being proposed is that in each of those, the Green River main stem already has a catch and kill regulation on it. The Green River does as well. And what we're asking is that if an angler on Nine Mile Creek, which isn't a fishery, but if you're at the confluence of the Nine Mile Creek and the Green River, that if you face the Green River, it's a catch and kill. Likewise, if you turn slightly and you're fishing at the confluence of Nine Mile and the Green, but in 9 Mile, that has the same regulation as the Green proper, and that's what we're asking. So really, it's consistency, and the waters that we listed are not sport fisheries per se. They're more places where we have movement of native fish up and down the system. And what we've agreed with the recovery program is to, you know, implement this up to the point where we manage water. So on the Duchesne River, it's up to starvation. And, you know, so there's what is for native fish versus what we value as a sport fisher. Does that help?
And what you're managing. Okay. Yeah.
What do you consider on the two-day limit processed?
Well, it's funny you ask that. That came up last night. We are going to define that. Its intention was clear when we wrote this. Last night it was, you know, is it, you know, in your freezer at home? What is it? And the intent was that if you bottle it, if it's in a Ziploc bag as a fillet, or if it's frozen in a freezer, that's processed. So
if you're up camping and you take your fish and you gut it and you head it, you know, head it and fillet it, that's not considered
that's processed. Yes.
Okay. But yes. Just gutting it and throwing it in your cooler is not considered processed.
Yes, they both are.
Okay.
Once you take a fish.
So how are you going to tell that was done yesterday and that one is done today?
Our law enforcement officers promised they could do that.
If I might help out with that. The intention of this rule is to provide a reward, or at least a perceived reward, for people that go to these more distant waters from the Wasatch Front. For example, Starvation Reservoir, which frankly can stand a lot more pressure than it's currently getting, and it would be good for the fishery if it did. And have them stay there for a couple of days. Now, what the law enforcement officer needs to do is determine whether that person caught 10 walleye in one day and 10 walleye in a second day, or did they catch 20 walleye in a single day. That's what we're talking about. It's not necessarily really trying to concern ourselves with the fish that are in the freezer at home, because there's not a lot we can do about that anyway. But if you go to Starvation Reservoir and you have
Great. 2 days
possession in, you know, in your trailer, it's still up to the law enforcement officer to try and prove, did you catch this in 1 day or 2 days? And that's called doing their job of going out there, observing you, fishing, etc. So it really doesn't have to be that officer inspecting your cooler. As we say, they have to have probable cause to do that anyway. They have to really observe you catching 2 days limit in 1 day, and then, you know, it's an over limit situation, as the law enforcement chief, you know, clearly articulated to us in our discussions with him. He said, this is an over limit situation, and they have to do the same work to prove an over limit with a 2 day possession as they would with a 1 day possession. So.
Paul said something that is very important for everybody to understand. You know, we have waters along the Wasatch Front that are 30 minutes from Salt Lake, and they get a lot of pressure. And the thing is, people go up there for day trips mainly. So they'll go up, may catch a limit of fish, come home, put them in the freezer. And they do that, you know, however often they do it. This does not affect that behavior. This affects, as Paul said, the more distant waters. We're hoping that this provides incentive for people to go to a Starvation Reservoir or to a Pelican Lake that's outside of those near waters that typically people look at and they go, well, that's not worth my time to go to Starvation for one limit of fish. But if you can provide, even if it's a perceived incentive to go out, spend the night, and perhaps, you know, take two limits of fish, then that incentive gets them past those near waters to these more distant waters that, that can really use some additional harvest and additional pressure. That's the intent.
Any other questions from Mac? Okay, we've got questions from the public, and then we've got some comments that you can take care of here in a minute. So questions from the audience. Excuse me?
Real quick one. Real.
Come up here and state your name, if you will, at the microphone. Thank you.
My name is Jeff Taniguchi. I'm representing myself, but I sit on the Blue Ribbon Fisheries Advisory Council, and I'm also on the Utah Council of Trout Unlimited. And I have a couple of issues, but just wanted to ask a question to these guys if there's been a creel census on any of the spear fishermen.
We just finished a creel on Jordanelle, and I'm going to be more simple than that. We have never creeled a spearfish, ever, which means that their numbers are so low that so far they can't be sampled.
What do you mean by creel the spearfish?
That's why we have a list. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. That's what we have. We have a list of questions. We'll ask them questions, collect data and information, how many hours he was out, what they did, where they went, and those kinds of things, just to collect data.
And
did you say grilled or
creel?
Creel. 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 In the days when they used to carry a creel and put their fish in their creel and things like that. Yeah. So it would be, what's in your creel, buddy?
It's a way for us to, you know, there's a method behind it that makes it statistically defendable. So, you know, it's a science-based method of determining how many anglers you have out there and how many fish are being removed and the time spent. And when we do a 12-month creel, it gives us a really good insight as to exactly what happened throughout that year. We're not going to creel every angler, but all told, we're going to get a really close idea as to what's going on. And what I said was, in all of the creels that we've ever completed, we have never interviewed a spearfish.
I didn't know if it was related to waterboarding or just.
Okay, sorry, that caught me off guard. Okay, so I've got comments cards here. Those that want to make comments, would you come up to the mic, state your name, and make your comments? Lynn Edling? Do you want to come up and make a comment, or did Lynn leave?
It's gone.
Lynn has left. He had a question here. Poison of fish in Steinecker. It would be nice if, before the poisoning happenings, to let people fish whether they have a license or not. Maybe a month or 2 weeks before on hand. Just a comment. Okay, Jeff? Dat Fox? Did I say that right? Jeff here? Or Jace. Jace, excuse me, Jace. J-A-C-E. Oh, he's not here either. Okay, Red Fleet. Regarding its comment, regarding the killing it off of fish, if this is done, there will be many fishermen that will never come back, which will result of a loss of revenue, not only to the state, but is going to make a lake that I'm fond of going into something that is not appealing at all. It's a bad idea. Okay, Bo Dalton, Red Fleet. Bo's not here either? Wow. Killing off of the lake is a bad idea. The park is going to lose money. No more people with boat will return to this lake. The walleye and bass are getting really good. I know of 5 people with boats that will not return. Do not kill off the lake, and remember that it is the people like me and my friends that make so you have a paycheck. Okay. The only other comment card I have is from Ken Strong. Ken, and I'd also read and receive an email from you, Ken. I don't know if he's going to be here.
My name's Ken Strong. I'm representing Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife. First of all, I'd like to thank you guys for the opportunity of being here. I know that there's a lot of hard work that goes into your efforts and thinking and planning and making these decisions. And I'm glad that you take time to do that. I also like to thank Paul and Drew for all of the work that they do in the fishing, because they are true. Their desires are true in the fishing, and they're very helpful and informative when you ask them questions. What I'd like to do is say that the SFW accepts the recommendations that the DWR has put forth in the fishing, with the exception of 3 things. The first thing being, instead of a 2-day possession limit, we would like to see a 3-day possession limit. The reason for that is, in our birds, in the upland game, everything is 3 days. If we put the fish in as a 3-day, it makes it a little simpler for the public, less hassle, and it gives the opportunity to put a couple more fish in the fridge or freezer for the winter. Second of all, we would like to see where, if a person takes time to cook the fish, such as bottled or smoked, but they're cooked, that they no longer count on your limit. And that would give a chance for people to bottle fish and put them in their storage. Right now, if you bottle fish and put them in your storage, they still count on your limit. You can't go fishing. The third thing would be where they have strawberry eliminated from the multiple possession. We would like to see strawberry taken off that, and then basically it would put it statewide with the exception of Flaming Gorge. One of the concerns is, if I go to Strawberry and I go fishing and I catch 4 fish and I go home and my neighbor comes up and says, "Hey, Deer Creek is hotter than a firecracker, let's go up there in the morning," I can't go, because I caught my 4 fish at Strawberry. Therefore, until I eat those 4 fish, I can't go fishing again. So we would like to see Strawberry put in with the rest of the state over that. And I did talk with, one of the reasons was Strawberry anglers brought up the comment that they're afraid that they were the ones that opposed this. And I talked to one of them yesterday morning. I'm on a group that works with Strawberry. And I asked him about it. He says, "Our biggest fear is that the DWR law enforcement people can't enforce the law." And I do not accept that. I think that the DWR people can enforce the law. I think they have the intelligence and the know-how to know what's going on. And I hope that you guys will take time to consider this and cast a vote on it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Jeff Taniguchi, did you have a comment?
I was called this morning from Paul Draymond, and he is the chair of the Sportsman, or for the Anglers Coalition of Utah. And we're speaking to this exact issue on the proposed three fish. And I know that it went through the southern region. Being on the numerous committees that I'm on with fisheries, it's extremely important, and even in our region, to look at even waters like Pelican, where we have 25 fish that we can take out. This would just add to that. I think it would probably be a law enforcement nightmare. And, you know, we all know that strawberry is the number one fishery in Utah, and that has to be protected. Flaming Gorge was taken off the list, but I think that there's just a whole lot of waters out there that could be impacted by a three-day possession limit. You know, some of the nightmares from the past have been exactly what we said, and it's not that I'm anti-catch and eat. I think that's a wonderful thing, but I think the division is well in line with the two-day possession, and I think that the three-day could be pretty problematic for not only law enforcement, but for the biologist in Blue Ribbon waters and some of the other waters that are kind of on the fringe. And so I'm speaking for myself. I delivered the letter for the Sportsman, or for the Anglers Coalition, and we just have to thank all you guys for what you do. And I work with these guys quite a bit with the council, and I know what they do, and I appreciate them. Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion by the RAC.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I've got one question for Mr. Taniguchi. Mm-hmm. You say you just represent yourself, but does your organization support what you're saying?
Well, you know, it's going to, we meet every once a month, and this is kind of one of those things that kind of popped up that we've had a lot of email exchanges with. So we'll be meeting on the 28th of this month, and this will probably be on the agenda.
But at this point in time, you do not, this doesn't represent.
No, and I definitely don't represent them. I'm speaking for myself, and I was asked by the Anglers Coalition to deliver the letter. And, you know, it's not only trout, it's all of the warm water species that we have, particularly in the Northeast region, pelicans. We have lots of great resources here. We have the second most blue ribbon waters in the state, and it could be problematic. A place even as like Jones Hole, for example, if everybody took three limits of fish out of there, it could be really problematic to that fishery.
I guess here's an email that probably ought to be read in for the record. Roger Wilson, Aquatics Chief. No, that's this is some communications back and forth.
He said what happened is Roger forwarded this to me, mm-hmm. so that I would have it for the meeting, and it was from Paul Draman, Chair of the Utah Anglers Coalition.
Okay, let me just read this. Kevin, I'm Chair of the Utah Anglers Coalition. Coalition membership includes Utah Bass Anglers, Friends of Strawberry Valley, Strawberry Anglers, Utah Council Trout Unlimited, Salt Lake County Fish and Game, Rocky Mountain Anglers, Walleye, Federation of Fly Fishers, High Country Fly Fishers, Park City, Stonefly Society, Salt Lake, and several angling-oriented commercial entities. We've been working closely over the past several months with DWR Aquatic personnel in reviewing proposed changes to the fishing regulations. We have voted unanimously to support the changes which will be presented to your RAC this evening. One item that received a great deal of discussion was extending the fish possession limit to 2 days on selected waters. Some waters, Strawberry Reservoir, Flaming Gorge, and a few others will remain with a possession limit of only 1 day. This was acceptable to our coalition. Extending the possession limit to 2 or more days on these selected waters, or 3 days on the remainder, would have an extremely negative impact on fisheries. The coalition encouraged URAC to support the division's proposal as presented. Thanks, Paul Grumman. Any other discussion by the RAC?
Question that I had in response to the SFW representation, and I'm going to address this to you, sir. What would prevent someone from moving into a mass production if we were to allow for people to bottle their meat and not count that towards their possession?
Well,
is there any way that you would regulate the commercial sale of a wild fish?
We discussed that, you know, driving down the road. You know, I think it would be wise to survey, you know, the angling public and get a feel for just how many people bottle fish anymore. I don't. You know, I don't know of a soul that I interact with that does bottle fish, so I don't know what impact that could have. I do think it's worth, you know, doing an in-depth survey and asking that question. The truth is, you know, the intent, there's two things. The intent is to direct pressure to places where we need more pressure. And so we have to keep that in mind. At the same time, you know, the rationale for 2 versus 3 or 2 versus 4 has to do with the fact that, you know, the rest of the neighboring states that have a multi-day possession limit in their fisheries world have a 2-day. And so, you know, to have a 3-day means that we would never sync up with Wyoming in a 2-day possession limit. You know, we would always be different. And so we would have, you know, just a real issue with our neighboring states. 2 is easier for them to sync with, since that's the, you know, most accepted multi-day possession limit in the fishing world. But as far as the bottling, I think it's a, you know, we discussed it driving down the road. It's a real interesting question. You know, if you'd asked me, and I was living in the 1920s, I'd guess everybody was bottling fish. You know, in 2013, I don't know.
And I'm not sure that there's a market for it either, but there, you know, you create a loophole like that that could be potentially, you know, dangerous to the ecosystem and the population of the fish. I just wondered if that is something that
we've seriously considered that. And you know, the truth of the matter is, and this is something that, you know, that we all know, everybody. If you live within 30 minutes of the Wasatch Front, or 30 minutes, let's say you go up to Steinecker, which is, you know, 15 minutes from your guys' house here, you go up there, you catch your trout, you come home, you may eat 2 and freeze 2. And then you go back and you catch another 4 and bring those home to your freezer. You may eat 3, and pretty soon, you know, you don't know what you have in your freezer. That's not what we're talking about here. You know, what we're talking about here is the camping potential, the multi-day trips, where we can get people the incentive to go camping and fish 2 days and keep 2 limits instead of driving up to, you know, the same place that's near home and doing the same thing. So that's the intent. But as far as the overharvest, if it's happening, it's happening now. And whether this is in place or not isn't going to change that behavior.
Is there going to be a dramatical impact biologically on the population of the fish by increasing the limit by doubling?
In certain waters, it'd be nice to think that. Okay. The waters that we're really interested in, we have a creel coming up on starvation in 2015. And that's one of the waters that we hope to direct some pressure to. And that'll give us an idea of what effect this has on those waters. And it'll either say, you know what, our fears are unfounded, we're going to be okay, or we need to change the limits, because that would be the natural response to, you know, to an issue, is reducing the limits and having a 2-day possession.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other discussion in the RAC? Entertain a motion.
Move to accept as presented by the state.
I second it.
Have motion and seconded. Need to make a vote. Beth seconded. Carrie was the motion. Vote on as presented, restated.
The motion is to accept as presented by the state. Thank you. Give it to the board. All those in favor?
All those in favor. Any opposed? Looks like it was unanimous. Okay, thank you, Drew.
Thank you.
Okay, we don't have any other business. Anybody have any other business? Somebody want to make a motion?
I move the meeting to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye. Thanks, guys.